Tata Paramahamsanam Muninam Amalatmanam Bhakti Yoga Vidanartam Katam Pashem Ahistriyaha. Okay. Well, I guess we then go to the translation. And Queen Kunti Devi says to Lord Krishna, "You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly?" So this again, we always give this perspective. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. First two cantos are his lotus feet, and it goes up progressively to his legs, his waist, chest, arms, throat, smiling face, forehead, and helmet, through 12 cantos. Yeah. So this first canto especially we see as a preface, and it tells us why the book is being spoken, under what circumstances, who's the teacher, who's the student, that. So all these things are here in this first canto. We meet Maharaj Pariksit in a very practical way. We meet Sukadeva Goswami in a very practical way. And the situation with Kali Yuga coming and Maharaj Pariksit kind of being the first example of somebody, you know, getting the problems created by Kali, you know, as the proper person, you know. And since Krishna has already left, Krishna Svadam Upagatai, you know, then the question is, where are we going to get Dharma, you know, Jnana, all these kind of things, because he's gone, you know. And so the answer is Srimad Bhagavatam. So of course, how is it produced? Who's asking the questions that make the book? Who's giving the answers? You know, who's talking? Who's, you know, like that. So now we're involved here then with the what was going to happen was that Suta Goswami was going to tell them this history of who is Maharaj Pariksit, how the Pandavas renounced and Krishna left. And then the scene was set for Bhagavatam. But it seems like there's a little bit of a digression here, because now he's expanding out into how Krishna was there for the Ashvamedha Yajnas, or came back for the Ashvamedha Yajnas. Well, I guess he was there. Yeah. And he left for Dwarka. He'll also then be around for Bhishmadev's departure. And he'll come back, I think, for the birth of Maharaj Pariksit. And then things go on very nicely for quite some time. But Dhritarashtra also, very principal person, he leaves. You know. And then we'll see how Krishna enters Dwarka, how he's received in Dwarka. Yeah. And then finally, then the departure of Krishna, departure of the Pandavas, and how Maharaj Pariksit takes over. And then in the end, how the Kali Yuga establishes itself, and Srimad Bhagavatam is established for the proper Dharma in this environment. Right. So right now, so we'll get back to the birth of Maharaj Pariksit after a few chapters of digression, and maybe Suta Goswami is seeing the audience, and then because it's a Purana, the thing is not just to transmit data like the Vedas, you know, with hymns for certain sacrifices. But the thing is to communicate the bhava, the feeling. Yataditam yatamati. Yeah. I shall try to make you understand this as I understood it. He tells them that. Yeah. And so sometimes that means backing up, to giving a little bit more history. Sometimes it means you can eliminate something because the audience knows this. In Prabhupada's books it says Indra, the king of heaven. But if you write that in India, it's kind of like ridiculous. Like that, you know. So everybody knows who Indra is, like that. You know? So here, though, we need this, you know, Indra, the king of heaven. You know? So it seems that maybe that's what's happening here. And the more the background with Bhishmadev and Kunti, and very powerful personality, very incredible situation when Krishna is there. You know? And so this is the kind of a little bit of the background. Of course, Prabhupada, he chanted, he gave lectures on these, I think, three different times, if you look at it, in three different parts of the world. Something like Italy and Vrindavan or something like that, India. And of course, there's a recording of him chanting the prayers. In so many ways, it seems that Prabhupada very much attached to these prayers like that, and different esoteric suggestions about that. But right here then, Kunti is, you know, trying to catch Krishna, trying to stop him. And so then she starts off by identifying him properly. You know, in Vedic education, it's not just a matter of transmission of data. It has to be within context, like that. It's very important. There's, you know, the information without the context is, can be the exact opposite of what you think it is, depending on who's speaking, under what circumstances. So she identifies him first, Namashye Purusham Twadyam Ishvaram Prakateparam. And she identifies him first as the being, the creator of the material world, which may be Mahavishnu, you know, maybe Garbhadakshay Vishnu, like that. Yeah. And she says that he's everywhere. He's outside, he's inside, everywhere. But the amazing thing is that nobody can see him like that. He's inside, outside, so nobody can see him like that. You know? So then today's verse, you yourself descend, why does he come down? To propagate the transcendental science of devotional service under the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists. You know? Yeah. So that's why he comes, to give this science of bhakti yoga, but who can understand it? So she's saying Paramahamsas, Munis, but then you say, well, how can I understand it? So it's Prabhupada's purport. Okay. Even the greatest philosophical speculators cannot have access to the region of the Lord. In the Upanishads, it is said in the Upanishads that the Supreme Truth, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is beyond the range of the thinking power of the greatest philosopher. He is unknowable by great learning or by the greatest brain. So if you can see our PowerPoint show here, we have a picture on the right of Albert Einstein with his hair standing up. It's incredible. And the other person with him is Professor Tolman. And I don't know if he also got Nobel Prize or not, but he was there's a whole hall, you know, big like hall named after him at UC Berkeley, like that. And above we have some mathematical equations here. We have Bernoulli's equation, and looks like they're giving a history is Euler's equation, which is irrotational and conservative, consumpting or incompressible. And down below has Bernoulli's equation. And Bernoulli's equation has something to do with the fluid dynamics and stuff like that. You know. So I was sitting with a mathematician one time, and I asked him, can all mathematical formulas be expressed in English? And he was kind of smiling a little bit, and he thought about it, and he said, yes, because you start off defining what is this number, what is that process, multiplication, addition, with English, you know. But then you let some symbol, like a plus sign, then stands for the process of addition. Or X stands for multiplication. Which means you're supposed to add the number to itself a certain number of times, like that, you know? So you could write everything we see in front of us here in terms of Bernoulli's equation. It could all be written out in English, but it would have to be very precise English, with a certain protocol established, and grammar established, strict grammar. And then it becomes this gigantic process then of, you know, applying fundamental abilities of mathematics, basically, which is dependent upon time and space. How you identify time and how you identify space, like that. And the third thing, of course, is mass, you know, these things. And later on, electrical energy was added, and gravitational energy were added to mass. And now then they have atomic forces, you know. And by this process, they're trying to understand the cause of all causes, you know. But it's explaining that even these great, great, great personalities with this incredible, I mean, they have incredible you know, ability in this area, you know, in their minds. They know maybe 12 languages, 14 languages, you know, from Europe. You know? And so, but it says they have no access into the region of the Lord, just by this process. Charles Townes, this Nobel laureate who discovered the laser, we work with him with the Bhaktivedanta Institute. He was also a very nice American Christian, like that, and some very simple, nice belief in God. So it doesn't, and actually in quite a few cases, these scientists are religious. They have some idea like that. But especially in the modern world, the general atmosphere has become so antagonistic that they may not express it like that. You know? Yeah. So this is the first point that Prabhupada's making, you know, that Prabhupada says that Krishna comes to give this to the munis. You know, the verse says that, to the big munis, the big speculators, the big paramahamsas, like that. But then Prabhupada contrasts by saying that these people, just by that particular thing, you know, can't have direct access. Krishna has to come and give it to them. Okay. The next part of the purport. Prabhupada says he is knowable only by one who has his mercy. Others may go on thinking about him for years together, yet he is unknowable. Others may go on thinking about him for years together, yet he is unknowable. This very fact is corroborated by the queen, who is playing the part of an innocent woman, like that. And so we have like a little thing here. And maybe later on, we can get a little time here, we can go ahead and look at this, specifically in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 667, where Gopinath Acharya is talking with his brother-in-law Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And of course, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is possibly the greatest example of a mental speculator. You know, hard to find a greater mental speculator than him in recent times like that, his ability. Gopinath Acharya said there was not a second person as, you know, as erudite and powerful of mind as him in all of India at that time. Yeah, yeah. Maybe Jiva Goswami could have dealt with him. But incredible. Even now, if you go to the University of California Bancroft Library, which is their rare collection of rare books, rare documents, you can still find things by Vasudeva Sarvabhauma. So apparently they have very, very ancient treatises of him on grammar and these kind of things. And of course he's become very useful, because when you're trying to do all this architecture for software and data, you know, storage and these kind of things, then these people were doing this with their minds. You know, they didn't have to use computers. They were using all these systems like sequential event. They call it like random access memory or read-only memory. They were using all these techniques of putting things in a series, putting pegs here and there, like that, you know? And then by that, the mind works in a certain way. If you can, a little bit of work developing your mind, there are people who memorize, phone books, you know, all the names in the phone book. Of course, you can memorize the last names with no problem. I tell people that I memorized five entire pages of the last names in the Los Angeles phone book. And I'll start reciting it right now if you want me to. Smith, 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 Smith. Okay. To joke, yeah. But these people don't just memorize the last names, they also memorize Albert Smith, E. Smith, and all that, like that, and so on. But they have to do it from beginning to end. That's the way your mind works. If you simply remember one link to the other, you can memorize incredible quantities of things. Harry, H-A-R-R-Y, Lorraine, L-O-R-A-Y-N-E. He has these books on memory techniques, a page a minute, I think. And you can see it. You can, in some work, it's good. You can memorize things and develop techniques and stuff. You know? So these people had these things, and so all these things that we're using for computer programming now, they were using to program their minds. You know, celibate from birth, born in a good family, unbelievable, you know, like that. So, but still, they can go on speculating for years together, you know. And but what does that do? This verse is saying that Krishna favors people who do these austerities. If they've done this austerity of controlling their mind, renouncing sense gratification. And sense gratification is more available in lower species, in bacteria. Okay, but they've renounced that, and they've taken birth as human beings, you know, with.
Maharaj, all of a sudden, everything went silent. Maharaj, I hope you can hear us. Well, that's really odd. Maharaj, your sound meter is
today, like philosophers. Hello? Yeah.
I'm sorry, Maharaj, you went out. Your sound went out for about 1 minute. Can you hear us all right? Uh-oh, we just lost him. Let's see. I'm going to unmute everybody just because we just had a breakdown here. Oops, didn't unmute everybody off. Okay, so we just lost Maharaj. You must be aware that he just went off. It's just the screen would have gone down. I'm going to...
If you want, I can carry on by getting a phone book and start reading last names.
Go for it. Go for it.
I hope he knows that he went off. Because I don't have a way to contact him.
You had a few words with him at the end, right?
Yeah, and then his screen went off.
So put something in the chat box.
Yeah, but he's completely off. I didn't know. He's not going to see that either. He's going to be talking and talking. And...
Does he use Skype?
Yeah, but he's not logged in. Well, send him a note anyway. Sometimes
yeah.
People say there's a note.
I can try sending him something on Skype. Let him know.
Great, yeah, hopefully. But I guess you travel all over the world. I must be able to travel all over the world. Oh, that's a shame. We were really on a roll there. I'm just checking to see if the last communication... Oh, he's got the phone number here listed. Let's try that. See if it goes through. He actually says he's got a mobile phone. I'm just calling right in the middle of class and we lost you. I hope you have one of these voicemails that you can actually hear when messages come through, but we lost you. Hare Krishna. Our humble obeisances. Okay, Prabhu, so sorry this has happened. Just like seems like 3 days in a row we had technical difficulties. Well, 2 days in a row. Yesterday we had Skype crash. And last night we had couldn't connect. And then today, like Maharaj had a problem on his side. We didn't even get through the purport. In the Assembly of Devotees, anybody's got a brilliant idea how to contact them? I can't think of anything here. What I'm afraid of is he is not even aware that he's off. Anyway, let's see. I'm going to share my screen here. Just 1 second. Okay, so see how far we got here. I think he was on that slide right there. Right, yeah, he was on that slide. Yes, there's more to even go on the print. No, I think it was on this slide, actually. Anyway, Narhari Prabhu, would you like to continue while I'm trying to figure out something? Oh, wait a minute. Let's see what we got here. Oh, no. Okay.
Shall I, maybe I'll shall read the purport? And then
yeah, read the purport. That way I can divert my mind and see what I can do on my side to try and contact Maharaj.
Okay.
I'm going to mute myself.
Okay, so we'll read the purport and then go from there. So once again, the translation, you yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service under the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Prabhupada's purport. Even the greatest philosophical speculators cannot have access to the region of the Lord. It is said in the Upanishads that the Supreme Truth, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is beyond the range of the thinking power of the greatest philosopher. He is knowable by great learning. Oh, I'm sorry. He is unknowable by great learning or by the greatest brain. He is knowable only by one who has his mercy. Others may go on thinking about him for years together, yet he is unknowable. This very fact is corroborated by the queen who is playing the part of an innocent woman. Women are generally unable to speculate like philosophers, but they are blessed by the Lord because they believe at once in the superiority and almightiness of the Lord, and thus they offer obeisances without reservation. The Lord is so kind that he does show special favor only to one who is a great, he does not show special favor to only to one who is a great philosopher. He knows the sincerity of the devotee. For this reason only, women generally assemble in great number in any sort of religious function. In every country and in every sect of religion, it appears that women are more interested than men. The simplicity of acceptance of the Lord's authority is more effective than showy, insincere religious fervor. So, what comes to my mind immediately is in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, when Krishna and Balaram had dispatched the cowherd boys to approach the brahmanas to ask them for something to eat. They were feeling some hunger, and the brahmins were really expert. They were so perfect in chanting mantras and mudras and tantras and execution with all technicality to perfection these various sacrifices that they were performing. But that when the Cowherd boys went and approached them, they wouldn't even acknowledge them. They were just so caught up in this Niyamagraha. They were so caught up in just the execution of the service without any real appreciation of that this was all ultimately for the pleasure of Krishna. They were just caught in the mechanical aspects, apparently. So when the Cowherd boys asked them, "Can we get something, Krishna? It's hungry. Balaram is hungry." It never dawned on them. They were just mechanically involved. So they went back all disappointed and reported that to Krishna. And he said, "Well, okay. Why don't you go and approach the women and ask them?" And he, Krishna admonished that, "But don't tell them we're hungry, because they'll become overly disturbed." So when the boys went to the women and they mentioned that Krishna and Balaram were hungry. Actually, they said they were hungry. They kind of blew it. They didn't really take. They kind of missed that instruction of Krishna's, and they were. As soon as they heard that there was some need, some desire of Krishna and Balaram, immediately they prepared all kinds of wonderful foodstuffs, and they brought that immediately to Krishna. And so we can see that it's not all about performance of some particular sacrifice, et cetera, et cetera. And we also should be very cautious in the same way, this is Niyamagraha, that when we're performing our devotional service, just like right now, we're hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we could stop and think, well, why am I listening to this Bhagavatam? What is my intention? Because as we're learning from this verse, that Krishna's really seeing everything in terms of one's intention. It doesn't matter whether one is giving a class or whether one is hearing the class. It doesn't matter whether one is very expert in chanting the Sanskrit in a particular way. It doesn't matter whether we're able to ask great questions or a little shy about asking questions. I mean, ultimately, what is our purpose of being here in this Bhagavatam class? And if our purpose is really in earnest, is to take shelter of Krishna so that Krishna is ultimately pleased by our activity. And I guess you could say there's sort of two aspects of our meditation, of our purpose. One is, I guess, primarily, especially in the beginning, is to purify our hearts. We were speaking a little bit before class about the Bhagavatam and how one devotee, a new devotee, we were welcoming him on board, and he was saying how he enjoyed being here. That's fine, but we don't really come to Bhagavatam to enjoy like you go to a movie or you go to some sporting event. We come to Bhagavatam because we want to purify our hearts. We've recognized that our human form of life is such a rare, rare opportunity. And that the beginning of human life is when we actually begin to inquire in earnest, atato abrahmajigyaso, who am I? When Sanatan Goswami, who was actually a great, great scholar, very learned, when he approached Mahaprabhu, he fell at Lord Chaitanya's feet, and the very first words that he spoke, Kami, who am I? I don't even know who I am. Kami anejari tapatroya, why am I suffering within this world the threefold miseries? So we should recognize what an awful predicament that we're in, that we're in this material world. We've completely forgotten our dear loving our loving Krishna, and we've been trying life after life after life with great futility to try to find satisfaction, but never ever finding it. And if we find some apparent satisfaction, it's always temporary, fleeting. And by the end of our life, it's all taken away. And then according to our karma, according to the activities that we've engaged in this life, then once again we get dragged off to to some other form. Karanam guna sangasya sarasajoni janmasu. Now karanam guna, the karanam guna sangha, karana cause or reason, guna sangha, as we've acted within this life, karanam guna sangasya sarasajoni janmasu, then the janmas we take, our next birth, sarasad, not knowing whether it's going to be an elevated birth, a lowly birth, and of course in the age of Kali it's generally a very, very lowly birth. So our intention in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam is knowing that this Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. And our purpose is to open our ears for Krishna to come in this incredibly medicinal form. There's Pibantiye Bhagatam La Atmasatang Katamritam Shravana Puteshu Sambritam Punanti Te Vishya Vadusha Tashiyam Vrajanti Tuchcharana Sarorhantikam. This is a beautiful verse from the Bhagavatam which says Pibanti, which means to drink. So I've joked before about how Ramananda is kind of like the transcendental bartender here. And what a wonderful service he has. Someone was saying that. And I think one of the Matajis in the beginning, thank you for your service. He's like the bartender serving out the greatest eternal nectar, and we're here to drink this immortal nectar of the Bhagavatam. Pibantiye Bhagavatam Atma Satam. So the Satam, the devotees, come here to drink this immortal nectar of Krishna, which is none different from Krishna. It's like eating prasad. This prasad is mercy, this Bhagavatam is mercy. And we want to katamrita, that's the nectar we're drinking, these wonderful descriptions, these wonderful pastimes of Krishna. Our ears are wide, wide open. Katamritam shavana, hearing puteshu sambritam. Puteshu means the holes of our ears, and sambritam means full, filled. Punanti. Punanti de vishya vadushatashayam. And the result of hearing this Bhagavatam, punanti, which means purification, punanti te vishya vadushatashayam. Vadushatashayam means the polluted aim of life, which until we came in contact with Prabhupada, until we came in contact with the devotees, vadushatashayam, our aim of life was completely off track. And vishya vidushitasya, vishya means sense gratification, and interestingly it also means poison. That we were on this path of drinking and hearing and ingesting and filling ourselves with the poison of maya. Radanti chachchanana sarorhanti kam. What the result is by hearing this transcendental nectar that radanti, we go to the lotus feet of Krishna. And that is our desire, is to simply open our hearts to Krishna, to manifest himself. And again, it doesn't matter. Queen Kunti is making the point, well, I'm just a woman. How is it possible for me to know? I'm not a great scholar. And gosh, in this day and age, I mean, none of us are really great scholars. It's amazing when we read about how scholarly real scholars were, Shrutidars. They hear a particular scripture, and they've got it memorized. I mean, we know, some of us know, you know, a few verses, some know a few more than others. But my God, the great transcendentalists that were, or sorry, not the great scholars of the past, it was amazing what they could memorize, what they were able to
is anyone else online? Okay, I guess.
You know, we lost our hurry. Maybe we get a hacker or something. Oh, this is so strange. Anyway, Prabhupada, I was not able to get...
Okay, I think I'm back.
Oh, there you go. I was
I'm, I'm sorry, yeah. It's I wasn't planning on giving class, so the calls are all starting to come to my phone. I better go to somewhere that's quieter. Queen Kunti is feeling that, you know, I'm a woman, I'm not a great philosopher, I'm not a great scholar, I'm not a great anything. I mean, this is her great humility, and how is it possible? Because otherwise Krishna is unknowable. Avan manasa gochara, which means that he cannot be simply expressed or understood through words. Avan, which means words, avan manasa. Manasa means to the mind. And gochara means approachable. That we can't approach Krishna through any material or mundane process. It's a matter of Krishna being pleased with our activities, pleased with our heart, pleased with what we're doing. And by Krishna's appreciation, then Krishna reveals himself to us. So that's our purpose in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, is to once again reawaken that dormant love of God, which is in every one of our hearts. There's the... let me get away from this reading phone. There's the beautiful verse. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Shidya Kabonoi Shravanada Shiti Chiti Koriye Udoi. That in every one of our hearts is the greatest treasure, the greatest unlimited storehouse of divine love. And it's there, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem. It's always been there. I mean, it doesn't matter where we are at in our sojourn within this material world, that divine love of Krishna is in the heart of every living being. Whether we're talking a human, whether we're talking a demigod, or even some what apparently lowly little worm in stool. That divine love of Krishna is there in everyone's heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Shidya Kabanoi Shavananda Shiti Chiti Koriye Udoi. But by hearing this transcendental sound vibration, then that awakens within the heart. And we should never misunderstand that it's a mechanical process of awakening it, just like you would awaken, like there's mechanical processes to learn material sciences. Ultimately, the only way that awakening of this divine love, this Krishna prema, the only way this ultimately comes about is first by the blessings of a pure devotee when we make that contact, and then ultimately by Krishna being very, very pleased with our activities, and then Krishna reveals himself. I was just reading in the Nectar Devotion last night, actually rereading over something I read before, I went back to read it again, about where Prabhupada says that he's speaking about Ashabandha, and Ashabandha means that we should have great faith. In it's kind of like hope against hope, even though it may seem impossible for us to obtain Krishna. And Prabhupada said that if we must have faith that, and he used the word by doing our best, if we are doing our best to follow these principles of sadhana bhakti that we're following, that we should have faith that at the end of this life, Krishna is going to reveal himself. Actually, Krishna is gradually revealing himself already. But at the end of this life, we're going to go back to home, back to Godhead. So Queen Kunti, as a woman, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mamhi Partha Vipasrita Yepi Siu Papayonia Striya Vaishas Tatashujas Tepiyanti Parangatim. It doesn't matter whether one is born Sudra, and of course, we know in Shastra it says Kalau Sudra Sambhava, that in this age of Kali, everyone is born Sudra, actually less than Sudra, and everyone is of low birth. The fact, by dint of the fact that we're taking birth in this age of Kali, that regardless of what our situation is, regardless of what our birth is, we all can obtain that perfection of divine love of God, ultimately by the mercy of Krishna, regardless of all of our disqualifications. So Queen Kunti is presenting herself as very disqualified. She's not a scholar. She's just a woman. and only by the blessing of Krishna will she be able to obtain her perfection of life. So we should all have that faith that we will in fact obtain full perfection if we simply continue with this process, regularly chanting our rounds and coming regularly to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And even though it may seem, oh my God, I've got so far to go, it's so difficult, I'm so fallen, I'm so this, I'm so that, Prabhupada has promised us. So Ashabandha, we must have that hope against hope, just as Queen Kunti's expressing, and then Krishna will in fact reveal himself and our lives will become perfect. So anyway, that's a few thoughts that immediately come to my mind. And did Maharaj, we get Maharaj back on board, or maybe someone has a question, or would, because we're already at almost at 7:30.
No, I was not able. I tried every possible way I could contact him, and I wasn't able to. You know what I would think is probably he had a crash on his side, because he would have seen that his screen would crash. But anyway. So
let's see if anyone has any questions, and we could, or some nice comments. I know Madan Mohan's on board, and Vidagda Madhava's on board, and Balabhadra's on board. So maybe someone would like to add a little something, or we have a lot of new people on board. Maybe there's some questions, and we can continue on.
I have some.
Oh, great. Good. Thank you.
Go, Prabhuji.
Okay. Thank you, Narhari, for giving me a little chance to write some notes here. It's a wonderful purport. Prabhupada makes the point that the Lord is beyond all mental speculation. He's, as Prabhupada says in other places, Krishna is faster than the speed of mind. So Srila Prabhupada says even the greatest philosophers cannot know him. And who are the greatest philosophers short of the learned Vaishnavas who have submitted themselves at the lotus feet of Krishna? The jnanis, those who are pursuing the impersonal realization of the absolute truth. And in spite of all their philosophical wrangling, they cannot approach the Supreme Person. And we all know, as Maharaj had up on the screen, a picture of Sarvabhavana, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, trying to help Lord Chaitanya by filling his ears for 7 days with Vedic interpolations. So, as Irmala so succinctly put it in yesterday's class, you can't see God without loving him, and you cannot love him without knowing him. So the Lord, he cannot be known by our mundane mind and senses, but he can reveal himself in the heart of a submissive and loving devotee. So women in general, this is in the purport today, Prabhupada says, women in general are unable to speculate like philosophers. Is that Maharaj?
Yeah, I see.
No, that was one of the Manichis rooting for the women.
No, that's Maharaj just came in.
Right. Oh, he did? Oh, okay.
Yeah, we lost it half an hour ago, it looks like. It's a great PowerPoint show.
Maharaj, were you aware that you were off?
No. The thing is, once the PowerPoint show goes, the little bar, if it disappears, it disappears, you know? Yeah. That's why it's good to check in every now and again if we're going to do this, you know?
Yeah, or be logged into Skype, or just have something, some way we can contact you.
Yeah, I guess, keep the Skype open there,
Vidagda Madhava was, what we did was, Narhari Prabhu finished the purport. He gave a very nice little presentation for 10 or 15 minutes, and then we opened it up, and Vidagda Madhava Prabhu was just making some comments.
All I did was just point out is that I went through the conversation between Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma, and there he quotes this verse that only by the mercy of the Lord can you understand Lord Chaitanya or Krishna, like that. Yeah. So I just amplified on that point. Yeah. But Lord Brahma says the same thing, without some mercy. And if we follow the four principles, we're paramahamsas, we're munis, you know, by chanting Hare Krishna, we can get that mercy. So basically, you know, it'll be presented like that.
It's funny, same thing I said. I guess we were echoing the same thing.
Could we have at least 20 minutes of your presentation, Maharaj?
Excuse me?
Is it possible to have at least 20 minutes of what we missed?
Should I try and connect to start meeting again, or just do it here?
No, you can continue, but Maharaj, can we just finish up with Vidagda? He wanted to finish.
Sure.
He was right in the middle of a thought. Vidagda, please go right ahead.
You know, Prabhupada says in this purport that women are generally unable to speculate like philosophers, but they are blessed by the Lord because they believe at once in the superiority and almightiness of the Lord, and thus they offer obeisances without reservation. So this purport links up with the end of yesterday's purport. And the end of yesterday's purport is, the Lord is beyond the observation of sense perception. Queen Kunti accepts this deficiency of the conditioned soul, especially of the women class who are less intelligent. For less intelligent men, parenthesis women, there must be such things as temples, mosques, or churches, so that they may begin to recognize the authority of the Lord and hear about him from authorities in such holy places. For less intelligent men, this beginning of spiritual life is essential, and only foolish men decry the establishment of such places of worship, which are required to raise the standard of spiritual attributes for the mass of people. And then Prabhupada's last line in the purport, for less intelligent persons, bowing down before the authority of the Lord, as generally done in temples, mosques, or churches, is as beneficial as it is for the advanced devotees to meditate upon him by active service. In other words, it opens them up, as Maharaj was just saying, for the mercy of Krishna. So we need to get simple, as Narahari Prabhu was saying, and apply ourselves to the process of submissive hearing, but truly submit ourselves at the lotus feet of Krishna and dedicate our lives to trying to please him. And in this way, Krishna will make crossing the ocean of birth and death as small as the puddle in the calf's footprint. And we will all get his help and his mercy and his permission to cross that ocean.
Thank you, Vidagda Prabhu.
Very nice.
Okay, Maharaj, with strong, my teeth, please forgive us, you know, for whatever technical difficulties there were. And please, if you'd like to finish up.
Oh, we didn't lose him again, did we?
No, he's here on Skype.
How far did the PowerPoint show go?
You left right about 7 o'clock, and I believe you were on this one where it said, you have the pictures of the nuns, and it says women in general are unable to speculate like philosophers. Wasn't that it for Bruce?
Uh-huh.
Wasn't that the last slide?
Yes.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, so why don't you go to the next one? Have you got it there? That's the
yeah.
God help the girl. Okay.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada just finishes the purport. And okay, then the next one I have a summary there. I have 3 points, and there's a picture of Mother Yashoda chasing Krishna. And so this is a summary of the prayers by Queen Kunti. The first thing is that Krishna is leaving. That's the first thing. And later on, in one of the purports, Prabhupada will say that the entire purpose of Queen Kunti's prayers is how to catch Krishna. Yeah.
And so she says, well, you know, maybe you come because Brahma calls for you. Maybe you come because the kings call for you. Maybe, you know. And then she's talking, she even talks about Krishna being captured by Yashoda. And that's just beyond belief, you know. Are you still there, Ramananda?
Right. I hear you, Maharaj.
Yes.
Okay.
All on board.
Why don't you somebody stay open, then I know I've got a chief guest there. Somebody be the chief guest. Okay. Ramananda, be the chief guest. Okay. Then I know we got something here. Okay. So anyway, how to catch Krishna. And she even thinks about Goloka. Everybody knows about Goloka. And has some hint about it, at least. Because Krishna is so famous, you know. So some people got a little bit more news about Goloka. And Kunti's one of those. But her level of consciousness is not up there. It's just bewildering to her. And she cannot understand this, she says that, you know. So she's trying to catch Krishna at another level than Yashoda. You know? And so then she says, well, some people say you come to revive the process of hearing and chanting, by which people can become free from birth and death. And then we can imagine that Krishna kind of smiles, oops, yeah, you got me. So that's basically it. Like they're saying that as soon as we adopt this process, we surrender to this process of hearing and chanting. Don't chant about other stuff if you would like to chant about, you know. Sense gratification described in poetic forms, subtle forms, and with a sincerity, an actual result of getting out of this mess, purifying ourselves, that's all Krishna needs. You know, Krishna will come and hang out with us then, you know, to complete the process of liberation into service, like that. You know? So the first point is Krishna's leaving. She's trying to figure out how to catch Krishna. She figures out how to do it, which creates more problems. Yeah. But finally, the conclusion is, her conclusion, after, you know, thinking about high processes, lower processes, she says, Sri Krishna, Krishna Saka, Vrishni Risha Bhavani Drub, Dahanapa Varga Virya. And so she's identifying Krishna as a friend of Arjuna. Because again, everybody knows Krishna all over the world. There seems to have been like this cult of Vasudeva and Sankarshan showing up here and there in Mexico, everywhere. Because that's how Balaram were known, as Vasudeva and Sankarshan. Their time in Vrindavan was like, oh yeah, when he was a child, he was hidden. That's the whole summary of all Krishna Lila. Yeah? Oh yeah, when he was a child, he was with his uncle. Yeah, and then he came back. Yeah? So, but, you know, those pastimes are confidential. So, Kunti knows about Krishna, and because he's a part of the royal family, this and that, she knows about him more. She knows about the politics he's involved in, what he's doing, how he acts. But at the end, it seems her conclusion is Sri Krishna, Krishna Saka. And she really knows Arjuna. And she may even appreciate Arjuna as a more advanced devotee than she is. But she's lived with him. She's been through him, everything with Arjuna. So then, to know Krishna through Arjuna becomes even more intimate. You know? So it's kind of like the conclusion of prayers is to engage in this process of practical hearing and chanting to understand Krishna, to overcome these specific problems we have, very specific we have, you know? And get the result. And we do that through the association of devotees. Okay? Then after that, we just, again, there's this little section about Gopinathacharya and Sarvabhauma. Because Sarvabhauma is the greatest mental speculator who's ever existed. I mean, it's unbelievable, his level of erudition and the size of his brains, everything else. You know? Probably like 64 gigabyte brain, you know, in terms of memory and functioning. You know? But even still, he couldn't understand Lord Chaitanya. So Gopinathacharya was his brother-in-law. So sometimes they would argue, and Gopinathacharya starts getting a little bit hot under the collar, you know. And Sarvabhauma tells him, "Look, we're just joking, Gopinath. We're just friends here. We're arguing, you know, logically like that, you know, just having a little friendly debate." You know? But Gopinath quotes this verse from Lord Brahma,
667. And Lord Brahma says the same thing. You know, and the purport is very simple. Prabhupada says people try to become happy through sense gratification. They try to acquire knowledge through speculation. And neither of these satisfies them. Hungry, thirsty. But a little surrender, you know, a little bit of determination to serve Krishna, you know, and then even Shantarasa, just accepting Krishna's greatness. Okay? And then the path of auspiciousness comes. Our life becomes auspicious. Our work, our friends, our family, the goals we have in life, you know, the future, you know. And so that's the very, very important parallel of Gopinathacharya and Sarvabhauma. And the final thing we have some pictures, images of Kunti's life. You know? And there's a very beautiful picture on the internet of her standing with her back to the sun here and looking like this, like, you know, it's like, because she had to make this choice, you know, whether to have a combine with the sun god there or not. And it seems that she had a choice, you know. So she made that choice. And probably it was incorrect. She shouldn't have done it, you know, like that. And all of these catastrophes created like that. Yeah? Then later on, in the court of a court, so many things were happening, so many choices she had to make. She could have revealed who Karna was when he came, and there would have been no battles, anything else. Yeah? But she kept her honor intact and her secret. You know, so her life is very nice meditation, very wonderful contemplation, yeah? To see how and how devotee, you know, and she's a good devotee, my God, you know. But still she has weakness of character, like all of us in different things. You know? But she's so close to Krishna already that it seems that Krishna can take even those faults and use them for his purposes in a very, you know, practical way. You know, she does something wrong, but then Krishna, okay, he uses that, you know, to accomplish his things and to keep the whole scene, you know, in the right direction like that. Yeah. So we have another chance too. So she's a very wonderful example, you know, of meditation. These prayers are a wonderful example, and they should be taken as a whole, you know, not get caught up in these individual verses and stuff like that. And practically speaking, to understand and take them all to heart. Ooh, she has such a broad vision on things. She has such a broad bhava, such a broad consciousness of the political environment. How it relates to Krishna and everything else. So if we could actually just hear and chant them, repeat them again and again, and then get her mercy, you know, because of that, enter into them, and my goodness, we would be so advanced if we could just come to this level of Kunti, and our appreciation for the glory and beauty of Vrindavan would be so much advanced too, like that. So that was kind of our presentation. I hope you're still there.
Here I am, all right.
Okay. And the PowerPoint show is up on our webpage. If you go to our webpage, jayarama.us, then go to the archives, you can find it. I think it says like SB, you know, whatever it is, SB18, something like that. Just go down there. So we're putting all these PowerPoint shows there. Actually, honestly speaking, it took us about 2.5 hours to make this PowerPoint show.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's not easy. It looks...
I know. It's certainly not easy.
Yeah, and the thing is that to have the things, you put one thing a little like 1 millimeter to the left, and it irritates you. You got to put it back, you know. But it's so satisfying too, to be able to present Krishna in this fashion. That's one of my addictions.
Okay. Well, thank you, Maharaj, very much.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you all very much.
Can we make a comment?
Oh, yes, please.
Oh, I wasn't sure if you were unmuted. I wasn't sure when you were talking about with Gopinathacharya that you had mentioned after he got kind of heated, he says to him kind of like almost sarcastically, he says, unless you get any mercy, you just can't understand anything. You need at least one drop before you can understand anything. You could just see him kind of like being frustrated talking with him, saying
yeah.
that.
It's his brother-in-law.
Yeah. And then I was, when you're talking about catching Krishna, there's one word that I've looked up. It's a nice word from the second verse of the Bhagavatam, avarujate. And Prabhupada, he uses that word, he translates it three different ways, but in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and in the lecture at New Vrindavan in 1969, he says, the Srimad Bhagavatam is so nice that simply by reading, immediately one captures the Supreme Lord within his heart. So that he translates avarujate as captures. Three places he translates it like that. Instead of compact or establishes, it's captures. So you wanted to catch Krishna, he tells you how to do it. Srimad Bhagavatam.
But through the mercy of Prabhupada and the Lord Chaitanya, huh? Yeah.
They have to stick with it. And then my phone started going beep, beep, beep. The battery was going down, so I had to go
Hare Krishna. Okay, so thank you all very much, and I guess we'll try to stay online and listen to some of the classes too, and I guess hopefully next Friday also, you know, we'll be able to participate.
Okay, Maharaj, if after we close out, if you wouldn't mind me calling you on Skype just for a real quick.
Oh no, we're here.
Maharaj, I have one other quick question. Do you think this question that she said today's verse could have been a rhetorical question?
My experience is that, and also some comments, that when you chant these things, when you read these things, that the personality who wrote them is actually with you. Start to get.
You're breaking up.
So you start to get inspiration from them. Yeah. So you start to understand the consciousness of Queen Kunti and stuff like that. So I haven't contemplated that very much, but I was saying it may very well be. She may be like, what's the word like? What do you say this thing like that? It's a kind of teaching like that, where you say something the opposite of what you mean, you know, to teach somebody. What's that called? Anyway, there's some
famous verse.
Yeah, so she may be actually saying that, knowing that speculation is not enough. Yeah, and so on. And so she's actually kind of like this word, chiding or informing the. What's the word for it? Anyway, she's informing. I agree. It may be like that. Like she's chiding or chastising a little bit.
Do you remember the next verse?
Krishnaya Vasudevaya.
So it's like the answer. It's like a rhetorical question, and then she answers it.
So when I was offline there, I talked about five minutes. So it is. The next one is the answer. Nanda Gopa Kumaraya. You know, what lady is not going to be totally collapse when she sees Krishna as a cute little dusty cowherd boy with his pants falling off playing with his friends, you know. It's just going to be overwhelming. Yeah. So all the things in there are natural attractions for her. Krishna does that for the bhakti yogi. She becomes the greatest warrior. And so that's it. It doesn't even matter if you're caught in all this intrigue, you're caught in having to work on automobiles. Krishna can incarnate so your natural consciousness in your heart can just be absorbed in him. And the bhakti yoga is so nice. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Can you just hold just for one last question, Maharaj? No, he hung up. I'm so sorry, whoever that was. And also Madan Mohan, I'm sorry I had to mute you. There's too much echo. Anyway, Prabhus, thank you very much for your patience. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We'll see everybody back here on Monday. Otherwise, tomorrow morning, 2 hours earlier, Ravindra Sarup Maharaj, we are broadcasting his class as well, if you want to join us. So thank you very much, Rose. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Ramana Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Is there no Saturday class? Is that what you were saying?
Oh, I'm sorry. Today's Friday. God. Oh, jeez. Yes, class is tomorrow. Excuse me. Getting my days mixed up. Yes, tomorrow's class. All right. Hare Krishna, Bruce.
Thank you.
Hare Bol.
Hare Bol.